It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Chalmers, Cole, James. Man, you know exactly what happened. You don't need to see this clip. That's one of the most iconic calls on one of the most iconic dunks in the history of the NBA. But let's go back in time and tell the story of this moment. July 8th, 2010.
In this fall, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach.
LeBron James chooses the Miami Heat. Bron, Wade, and Chris Bosh team up to create the reviled Heatles and become the NBA's preeminent super team. That same summer, Jason Terry secretly gets the Larry O'Brien NBA championship trophy tattooed on his bicep, believing his Dallas Mavericks will win the NBA title. Big words from the Jet, or big ink needled into his skin. Later that next season, May 31st, 2011, Jason Terry and the Dallas Mavericks do make the NBA Finals. And who will they face for the title? LeBron James and the Miami Heat. Miami wins Game 1. Dallas wins Game 2 and steals home court. The Heat win Game 3 in Texas and take home court right back. NBA Finals. Mavs down 2-1 against the betting favorite Miami Heat. The tension is rising. Seems like a perfect moment for some Jason Terry trash talk. Jason Terry tells the assembled media that Miami isn't the best defense the Mavericks have faced in this 2011 playoffs. And when asked about LeBron guarding him specifically, Jason Terry said this, quote, "We're going to see if LeBron can do it for 7 games. That's going to be the challenge. Right now it's Game 4. Can he do it in Game 4? He wasn't able to do it in Game 2. That's a real quote. So what happens in Game 4? Let me tell you. June 7th, 2011, Miami's up 2 at halftime. They're up 4 after the third, but Dallas holds the Heat to only 14 fourth quarter points. And the Mavs come back to beat Miami 86-83, series tied 2-2. And get a load of this. Jason Terry finishes with 17 points. LeBron James finishes with 8. 8 points. LeBron's only scored in single digits 10 times in his 20-year career. And almost all of them were in 2003-2004. LeBron James has completely distorted statistics. That's tough to say, distorted statistics. Back to our story. Series tied 2-2. Dallas goes on to win Game 5. Jason Terry scores 21 on 67% shooting. Then the Mavs go on to win Game 6 and the NBA championship, fulfilling Jason Terry's upper arm ink pushed into his skin via needle prediction. 4-2, Mavs world champs, and in that closing game, the Jet, Jason Terry, who told the world LeBron James couldn't guard him for a full series, scored 27 points on 11 of 16 shooting. That's almost 69% from the field. Jason Terry was kind of right. 1 year, one season later, LeBron James wins his first NBA championship, and Jason Terry is a free agent. Where's the Jet gonna sign? How about LeBron's rival, the Boston Celtics? And on August 11th, 2012, Jason Terry gets more ink needled into his skin. This time in the shape of a leprechaun, the Boston Celtics mascot holding another Larry O'Brien trophy. Could it be? Could another Jason Terry tattoo prediction come true? Later that season, March 18th, 2013, LeBron and the Miami Heat are in Boston to face Jason Terry and the Celtics. Miami is in the middle of one of the greatest winning streaks in NBA history. LeBron is a champion, and the Heat are out for blood. With 5.5 minutes left in the first half, the Boston Celtics are up 13 points. The streak is in jeopardy. Miami is struggling with only 35 points in the game, and they're in need of a play to kickstart their comeback. But Jason Terry steals a Norris Cole pass. Dwayne Wade steals it back and flips it to
Chalmers,
who immediately tosses it to
Hall,
who throws it up for
James.
This is First Ballot. Welcome to First Ballot, the podcast that celebrates the moments in sports that really matter and inducts them into the First Ballot Hall of Fame. I am your host, Neil, the podcast Jordan Clarkson, half Filipino, half Austin Reeves, coming to you live from the Shaquille O'Neal Office Depot, big and tall, executive suite desk chair in my basement. It's important you remember I'm in this chair because I'm tall. It's not the big thing, it's because I'm tall. Today's episode of the First Ballot Hall of Fame podcast could be sponsored by Burger King. Rob, play the music. Chicken, chicken, chicken burgers, chicken fries and chicken burgers, red hot grill and something, something, have it your way. Happy K, have it your way. To our guests, have you ever had anything fun or funny, perhaps gravely dangerous happen to you at a Burger King?
Yeah. almost died in there.
One of my favorite Niles jokes where we haven't introduced him yet. You don't get to hear it, these jokes yet. Anyways, Burger King, throw me some money. I'm happy to sponsor your restaurant. The LeBron James casket job on Jason Terry is without a doubt a great sports moment. But is it great enough for the First Ballot Hall of Fame? We have to decide that today on this episode. And my guest here to do it with me is a hilarious stand-up. In 2022, he was named one of the comedians you should and will know by Vulture. Paste Magazine said he's ready to be a household name after his successful stand-up special, available right now for free on YouTube, Household Name. And I'm naming him Neil. Neil Magazine is naming him right now. You know this about me. I'm not always right, but I'm never, ever wrong. This guy is up next. You hear what I'm saying? This guy is going to break big and wide. And in 2 years, when he's off doing some show and maybe I'm producing on it, you will know that the con job started right here on this podcast. Me trying to get in this guy's side pocket starts right now. And lastly, he's a writer on the critically acclaimed hit TV show Dave on FX. It's Mr. Niles Abstin. Niles, thank you for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I forgot I had that many credits. That don't match up with how much money I got. I need to start working so goddamn hard so you can cut that list in half.
Niles, you're so funny. I get massive, massive vibes from you. Again, I'm not going to lie here. Like, part of this is like I've been following you for years and I just am like sitting here and admiring your comedy and your jokes and your stand-up special and also your approach to the business. I really appreciate it. I wanted to meet you. I'm so glad you did the show. I know that you're a sports fan, NBA fan. So I think this all works out perfectly for me. And then you're wasting your time. So it is what it is.
This is just my break from smoking. So this is cool. I needed to stop for a second today. So.
Niles, can you do me a favor before we get started? Can you table set for me? Can you say your favorite sport, your favorite team, and your favorite athlete of all time?
My name is Niles Abstin. My favorite sport is basketball. My favorite team is the Los Angeles Lakers. Let's but go. my favorite athlete of all time, I'm going to go with favorite basketball player of all time, Allen Iverson.
First off, all great answers. I feel like you're holding back on something in terms of athlete. Who else were you considering? It feels like maybe it was an athlete in another sport. Who else were you considering?
If I had to go greatest athlete of all time, I'd probably have to go Bo Jackson.
He's great. He's great.
Bo Jackson or Deion.
They're both phenomenal. I love both of them. To me, Deion Sanders, the patron saint of this podcast. Interesting you led with Bo over Deion. As a comedian, isn't Bo Jackson just a tiny bit corny and Deion Sanders is so incredibly funny? Shouldn't you flip that as a comedian?
Probably. And then it's like for wide mainstream audiences, they probably get the prime time, you know, thing quicker. Yes. It makes sense to them, yeah.
For sure. Niles, where were you born and raised? Mississippi, is that what it is?
Yeah, I was born and raised. I was born in Jackson, Mississippi, and then I was raised in a suburb outside of Jackson called Flowood.
What teams are you supporting there as a kid?
Okay, so my dad is from California. He went to UCLA.
Got it.
So I was raised right. So I've always been a Laker fan since I was little. Dodger fan when it comes to baseball. But because when I was born, it was the St. Louis Rams. He grew up an LA Ram fan. So we kind of just adopted the closest NFL team to us, which was the Saints. And then my mom's family is from Southern Louisiana. So they're all big Saints fans too. So it just all worked out. So I've been going to Saints games since I was like in diapers.
And you're in Los Angeles now. You moved out to LA?
I am.
How long have you been out there?
I've been in LA since the first week of 2016. So I've been here a little over 7 years.
When did you know you wanted to be in the entertainment business?
I was 20 years old. I was a sophomore in college. I was running track, Division I, and I was just kind of battling a lot of injuries. And eventually I had to get hip surgery. So I was out for a while. I was in a wheelchair for a little bit. I was on crutches. And when I would do therapy in the training room, I would just be watching like funny movies all day. And then I would just watch movies back in my dorm room because I didn't really like moving around much because it was so hard to move around. And eventually it just was like, I watched so many movies. I was like, I think I can like write these better. And which is a crazy thing to think of as a 20-year-old kid. But yeah, I just felt like I could write them better. And so I dropped out of college the next year and moved to LA.
Good for you. That's fantastic. Hold on. Let me, before we just blaze past this, you're a D1 track star. D1 track athlete. I shouldn't say star.
Yeah, right? I was not a star. Okay, the Africans were the stars, not me.
What event did you run?
I ran the 100, 200, and the 4x1. I still have the school record in my high school for the 100 meter dash.
Oh, hell. Wait a minute. Let me play it. I'm going to play.
Oh, hell yeah.
Fantastic. 100 meter. What was your time? Do you know? Do you remember your time?
10.67.
Unreal. So wait, as a kid, were you like thinking maybe, I mean, if you're a D1 track athlete, was there a point in your life where you're like, maybe I'll run in the Olympics?
Yeah, that was what I wanted to do.
Amazing.
When I was 15, when things really kind of started clicking, like 15, 16, I was like, I think I could, I want to, that's like a goal. I want to do that. So that was definitely something that I thought I could do.
and it came crashing down when you got injured.
Came crashing down.
Did you ever play football?
Yes, I played football all of my life growing up.
Were you like a running back too?
I played a little running back, but I was mostly a DB.
Amazing. Amazing. I was never that athletic. That's the end of my half of the story there. It's just never that athletic. Let's keep it moving. Niles, to decide whether LeBron James's casket dunk on Jason Terry goes into the first ballot Hall of Fame, we have to go through our Hall of Fame credentials. Those are the categories by which we judge our moment. The first category, the first credential, as always, analytics. These are the numbers, some of the stats behind this moment. I'm going to go through them. They're really interesting, honestly, numbers I didn't really remember. This is like a classic example of you see this dunk, you remember this dunk. Of course you remember this dunk. But do you remember much about the circumstances of this dunk?
It was in the playoffs, right?
It wasn't. That's the thing. That's a good answer. That you were wrong was a perfect answer because for me, wow. I knew nothing of this dunk. Pardon, I just didn't know anything about the circumstances, so I'm going to give you some of the background behind this, some of the stats. You comment when you see fit. Okay. Miami won this game 105-103. Okay. It was the Heat's 23rd win in a row. They ended up winning 27 straight. It was that long winning streak.
Yeah.
And this game put Miami, that 23rd win in a row, put them second place overall for longest winning streak behind those 33-win Lakers. I believe it's 33 wins that they had. LeBron played 42 minutes, 15 seconds. He shot 16 of 29, 55% from the field. He had 37 points, 7 boards, 12 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks. But that, you know, you say those numbers, and in general, usually if like there's a big game behind a great moment like this, like you've got the dunk and now you've also got 37, 7, 12, 2, and 2, and a win, 105, 103. Like in theory, once you start stacking up those accomplishments on a moment like this, it's like, how are you keeping this thing out of the first ballot Hall of Fame? But the big strike against the stats of this is LeBron has ruined stats. He's ruined them. You hear that number and you think nothing of it because LeBron James having a 30-something, 7-10, whatever.
It's regular.
It's regular.
That's how great he is.
You think nothing. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong now. You hear those numbers and you don't go, oh, my God, what a crazy. Right. It's almost like nothing. True or false.
Which is amazing. Because anybody crazy. Else, you're like, oh, shit. Westbrook had what?
I know. We're like talking about how the dude went off and now we just casually blaze past. I mean, I have written in my thing here to blow up about this and how those stats mean nothing to his career. This is what it is now. It just hit me. That's a almost a perfectly forgettable game for LeBron James.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Statistically, yes. Yeah, statistically, that game means practically nothing to his career.
Yeah, it'd be like if somebody was on the street going, bro, Niles Ashton killed it last night. People would be like, well, yeah. That's what they do to me. They don't care. You're supposed to be that good.
It's expected. Right. It's expected of LeBron. It's expected of Niles. Fantastic. Boston led by as many as 17 in the first half of this game. Miami stormed back with 5 minutes and 30 seconds left in the fourth quarter. LeBron either scored or assisted on every Miami basket. The last 15 points of the game, LeBron scores or assists on all of them. LeBron made the basket that tied the game at 103, and then LeBron hits the game winner with 10.5 seconds left. He didn't just dunk on Terry and embarrass him on national television. He then goes wins the game at the end of the game. Do you remember him hitting a game-winning shot against the Celtics in this game?
I don't think so.
It's funny how...
I remember watching this game live, though.
Yeah. It's funny that a dunk like this will just – it just, like, consumes your brain. And then you go, yeah, I know that dunk. Oh, great dunk. You can remember what happened. You remember how he fell. But the game just sort of drifts away and you forget about it. Well, I'm here to tell you, LeBron also won that goddamn game beating the Celtics.
Wow.
105-103. Fantastic. Jason Terry played 24 and a half minutes, 9 points, 2 boards, 4 assists, 2 steals, 4 big turnovers, one of them being big. And then 5 personal fouls, one of them being on LeBron for this dunk. Miami that year goes on to win the championship over the Spurs in 7 games. So good.
That was their first ring together.
Yeah, I think so. The first good game, a good dunk, a good moment, a good game, a good win, winning at the end. They go on to win the season. Can't really poke a hole on this from an analytics point of view. Let's move on to our next credential. It's the eye test. Niles, what do you see in this video? As you remember this dunk, as you think about this dunk, as you watch the video, what is it that makes this moment special? What is it that you see that might give this moment a boost and put it in the first Bell Hall of Fame?
Well, first, it's the way the play starts. It's like a real team play, like beautiful basketball, great defense, great trap, the steal. The touch pass at the to the alley-oop. It's just beautiful basketball that like they teach kids, like where they tell kids like no dribbles on this play.
That's right.
So it's just beautiful basketball first, and then at that point, you also gotta. What I'm thinking is you also gotta look at the impact of this game and this play. The year before, when the Heat beat the Celtics in the playoffs, that was like LeBron's first time beating the Celtics. So it's like a big deal.
That's right.
They lost the championship, so people were doubting the Heat. They go on this huge win streak the next year, beating a team like the Celtics like this. I feel like you could potentially say this play, this game, might have ended that Celtics dynasty in a way. It kind of took the life out of it. So it's like you got all that kind of riding on this game. It's during the winning streak. And then like a player like Jason Terry, who had beat LeBron in the finals the year before on another team, who had a fucking finals trophy tattooed on his arm. He guaranteed he's going to win the finals the year before, did it in your face. And it's like, oh, now you're on this other team. And like, I can really like, I can give my get back for that shit. I feel like that's all packed into that play. And so it was just, it was beautifully set up. And then the way he just dunked on Jason Terry, it was so cool that it was like 4 Heat players down there. Cause it was like watching somebody get jumped. Like it's like he got set up. It's like a dude was like, "Hey, bro, come walk over here real quick. Come walk over here real quick." And then the dude walks around the corner, and the biggest dude in the gang punches him in the face. That's exactly what it was. They set Jason Terry up to get jumped. LeBron didn't disappoint.
I mean, that is perfect. I feel like I live my life in search of those perfect sentences. This being like he got jumped is so funny. That is a perfect way to describe this.
There should have been somebody on the outside yelling, Ricky! They got him.
Niles, I mean, that's it right there. That's exactly why I have you on this show, to say something exactly like that. You get a moment like this because you're going to add something exactly like that. That was fantastic. That's so funny. I don't want to move past this. I want to bring up a couple things. One, I love from the bottom of my heart that two Laker fans get together to talk about how maybe this was the end of that Celtics run. That's fantastic. Yeah. I love that ad. I couldn't agree more. As someone that hates the Boston Celtics, I love that ad. That's fantastic. Definitely additive here. Right. I also have my submission for this eye test was ball never hits the ground. You said it. I completely agree. Yes. Plays a huge role in this. It's aesthetically very pleasing.
Yes.
D-Wade sort of flips it behind his back to Chalmers. Chalmers right over to Cole. Cole flips it up in the air for Bron, and he just hammers it. It's beautiful. It's Norris Cole's sort of like, you know, pass is a little awkward, but generally speaking, aesthetically very pleasing, a gorgeous little play. And then the other thing I want to add is there were two fouls on the play. LeBron James gets fouled by his Jason Terry's falling body.
Yeah.
And then tell me your opinion on the immediate technical foul. To me, as I watch that play, LeBron is clearly staring at him, and you're right. All of the emotion packed into that moment is from losing in 2011. I think D-Wade told the story that Terry saw Wade and Bron in a club, maybe it was Liv, and made him sort of go up and like shake his hand. And D-Wade talked about, you know, those two being humbled and using that. All of that jammed into this moment. Bron puts him in a casket and then clearly looks at him, and he takes a couple steps towards him, but LeBron does not like scream in his face. He doesn't point at him. There's no like big emotion and an immediate technical from the white referees. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I hate that you can't stare down in basketball.
It's crazy.
It's sometimes you just got to take that tech.
Right.
Because the play was just too good.
Too good.
The coach just has to understand. It's like, yeah, let your nuts hang, bro. Like, that shit was nice.
I love a good technical foul in a moment like this.
Yes.
Because it's essentially the referee being like, hey, wait, hold on, wait a second. You can't be doing all that. Like,
can't
it's just
have all that fun.
Yeah. I love anytime somebody gets, and by the by, that's going to be our next credential here. You mad. Rob, play my camera on clip here.
You mad.
Thank you so much. I love it when someone's mad. I love that the referee immediately feels like he needs to protect Jason Terry in that moment. That's a fantastic little ad there.
Yeah.
And then Jason Terry, I don't know if you saw this, Jason Terry goes and shoots the technical free throw, and when he makes it, he kind of does that thing where he's like, yup, made it. Like, he like turns to the crowd like, yo, I made it, like points, like you know, he does like a hand gesture acting like he made the technical free throw, like he could somehow salvage a little bit of his honor in this moment. Niles, can I ask you quickly about your career before we move on? So you told me in college you had the audacity to think that I can write this better, these movies better. So that you were thinking strictly of comedy writing. When did stand-up sort of become a dream of yours?
The crazy thing is I wanted to write just like all kinds of different kind of movies and stuff. I never thought about like strictly comedy ever. That was the crazy thing about it. And when I moved here, I had written like some short stuff, and like one was kind of like comedy leaning, and I had a friend that works in film production, and she read it and she was like, yo, you should like try stand up and like go say some of this stuff. And I didn't even know you could do that. Like, my favorite comedians growing up were like Bernie Mac,
right,
Cat Williams, Chris Rock.
Yeah.
I just thought they were the funniest people in the world, and they were just up there talking, you know. I didn't know you wrote a set and you practiced the jokes and all and open mics and that kind of thing. So it was like a whole world was opened up to me that I didn't even know existed.
Yeah.
And so I just started going to open mics and going to bars and bombing. I was terrible. I was a 20-year-old kid that just turned 21. Like, I don't have anything real interesting to say. So I was just up there talking about stupid shit, never being funny. And then it took me about a little over a year and it started kind of clicking.
Amazing. I was a huge David Letterman devotee, and I remember the same thing. I thought Letterman just said all, I thought he said all of the things that he said. I thought like he just had them. I didn't know that people were writing them for him.
Right.
So as you drop out of college and go to LA to start working in this insane industry, what are your friends and family thinking?
I lost a couple friends. They thought I was crazy. My parents were very, very upset. My mom cried. Oh, no. It was for some people in my life, it was like a traumatic moment for them. I don't understand. But
Have you won them over yet? Have you won these people over?
Oh, well, yeah, everybody believes in
Good
me now.
For you.
Yeah, Good everybody for you. Always knew. Yeah, everybody believes in me now. It's sweet.
Can you talk a little bit about your approach to the game? Let me give you a quick sort of summary on my thoughts on your approach to the game. You come off like a comedy entrepreneur to me. Is that fair to say? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, for sure.
I love that. I think it's fantastic. Can you talk about your approach? How do you intend to get through this business and get to where you want to be?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to use stand up as a way to connect to people so I can do the movies and the things like that. Cause I feel like when you grab, you create your own fan base like that, and then you make something, they're going to really come out and support it because they, like, I feel like your favorite comedians, you kind of know who they are because you like listen to the material. It's a very vulnerable thing. So yeah, I've definitely been trying to, like, my goal has really been to grab an audience that you wouldn't usually see at a comedy club and making them come out to see comedy. And so that's kind of the brand I've been building. And I feel like to get that audience, you do have to be an entrepreneur of some sorts and be able to adapt and do things differently.
Can you talk about your new special, that the 1,000 that you're doing? Can you talk about that
concept? Yeah. So basically, like, I have 2-hour specials online that people can see for free. So I wanted to do something just different. Like, I feel like the stuff I've put out and, like, my Comedy Central set, like, I don't have to prove I'm funny anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, that's known. That's not up for debate at all. So I don't need to have anything, like, out publicly new. So I wanted to do something, like, special specifically for people who would pay for it. So yes, I'm excited to, like, keep building this set. I think I got about a quarter of it done. So just
You're gonna let 1,000 people see it, right?
Yeah.
I love that. I love small room shit. I love your confidence. I think that's gonna really see you through. And obviously your talent's through the fucking roof. So I mean, you just described Jason Terry getting dunked on us and being jumped. I mean, come on. But I love you being creative. I love you doing some stand-ups, some specials and putting them out on YouTube. I love you directing some shorts. I love you doing this, you know, 1,000 special. I think I really appreciate you trying to be different. I think it makes you stand out. You put together stand-up shows too, correct? Like, as you go around, you're not just showing up. You're putting shows together.
Yeah.
Why? What's the thinking behind that?
Really, for me, throwing a show is kind of like, I think it's kind of, it's just for me, really. Like, I'm glad people come and pull up and support and everything, but, like, I need to get on stage as much as possible to develop a new set and work out new jokes and stuff. So if I can create an extra opportunity for me to get on stage just to entertain some people, like, from, like, my own show, then cool, you know. But it's really for me to get the work in.
I love it. Perfect. And that leads us perfectly to our next segment. It's called Dream Team. Everybody remembers the Dream Team, 1992. Barcelona Olympics, Jordan, Bird, Magic, Barkley. Barkley hit the guy in the chest with the elbow. It was fantastic. The Dream Team. Niles, the Dream Team segment on this show is me asking you to put together your dream team, your dream lineup. You're putting together, you already do this. You're doing this in different cities. You're doing this for your special. You're putting together a show. You've got full control. You're the executive producer. You can pick any stand-up in history, even the dead ones. Put together 3-4 people, 5 if you need them all. It's up to you. Put together your perfect dream team lineup, stand-ups, one night. You've got the perfect venue all laid out. Maybe it's in New York. Maybe it's in L.A. You get to pick the stand-ups. Give me the stand-ups and the order they're coming out.
Okay. And how many do I get to pick?
Well, it's up to you. 3, 4, 5, somewhere in that vicinity. But if you've got more, if you want to, you tell me.
4 killers is, like, the perfect show.
Here we go. I love it.
So 90s Martin has to be the host.
I love it. I love this. This isn't about me. I'm not going to interrupt you. I just want to say I love that out of the gate. Keep going.
90s Martin has to host. I have to be on the lineup. So
there we go.
I'll go first.
Niles out first.
I'll go first, and I'll try to keep it on. I'll try to keep it easy on the guys closing it up. Second has to be Bernie.
Bernie Mac is so good.
No. Chris Rock's 90s Chris Rock is second.
Got it.
Bernie Mac is third.
Got it.
And then you got to have Eddie Murphy close it up.
I love it. That's a great show.
No.
Oh, wait.
I got to change it.
Here we go.
Instead of Eddie, Richard Pryor.
Oh, my God. Eddie's getting the boot because he wants to keep it to four. Oh, fantastic.
I got to give it to Richard.
Richie.
But I can't take me off, so.
I love this. Listen, you can't end up running a 10-6-7. You can't be thinking about the Olympics unless you know you got the gas. And Niall's got the gas. He's coming out the gate first.
Yeah.
I love it. A fantastic answer. The next credential is our ear test. What did you hear in this moment? Niles, I want to play for you the call. It's from Mike Tirico. To me, maybe one of the better dunk calls ever. Let's listen to this together.
Celtics as a team shooting 67%. They're 20 of 30 here tonight. Jason Terry, good defense. Wade from behind takes it away. Chalmers, Paul, James! Whoa!
A fantastic call from Mike Tirico. Your thoughts on the call?
I just feel like beat by beat, like, it's perfect with his voice. Like, as the moment gets even more and more and more intense, like, so does he. And it's like, it's almost like he's like watching it, like, he can't believe it almost, like how beautiful the play is.
It really narrates nicely what you described at the beginning.
Yeah.
That it goes, that ball ping pongs around. It goes from one to the next to the next. It like steps up in sort of excitement, and so does his names. For me, for Mike Tirico to get those names out and to go all last names as that ball is ping-ponging around, that's fantastic. And then to nail the James. Let's listen to the names again here from Mike.
Chalmers, Paul, James!
Oh, God, so good. Isaac Lee, who a former guest, came on and said that was his favorite dunk and only described it by saying Chalmers, Cole, James. There's just something about hanging those names together, which is fantastic.
That's dope.
The next credentials are press conference. Any great sound bites from afterwards? There were a bunch. Let's listen to what LeBron had to say. This is a reporter asking LeBron if he saw Jason Terry underneath the basket.
Did you even see Jason down there?
Yeah, I seen him down there. I guess he didn't see me.
He goes,
dang.
How cold is that, Niles?
That was amazing. That quote is like LeBron to a T, you know?
Yes.
It's like he keeps it very simple.
Yes.
He said what he said, and you don't even need to question it, you know?
It's so cool. Such a cool thing to say. I mean, honestly, it sounds scripted. I'm talking to a writer here. It sounds like he scripted that goddamn thing. That's a very cool thing to say especially after you bury a guy like that.
Right.
Fantastic. I saw him. I guess he didn't see me. Really good, LeBron. LeBron went on to say, and this again speaks to your the water under the bridge that is Jason Terry and LeBron James. LeBron went on to tell the Associated Press, quote, "It's one of my better ones." I presume he's talking about the dunk. "It's one of my better ones, and the fact that it happened to JT makes it even that much sweeter because we all know JT talks too much sometimes. I'm glad it happened to him," unquote. Fantastic. Anytime you've got a little bit of a story behind a moment like this, then you've got obviously the dunk is fantastic, obviously the game is fantastic, and then to have a post-game press conference like that and say I guess he didn't see me. I mean,
yeah,
god damn, Bron. The next credential is Twitter fingers. Any great tweets from this? Phenomenal. Honestly, there were so many. It was such a deluge that it's hard to sort of trace genesis of some of the memes and stuff that took off online. First one I want to mention, guy did that, posted a picture of that Michael Jackson lean and then put, "Terry, are you okay? Are you okay, Terry?"
Ooh.
That's pretty good, Niles, right?
That's pretty good.
Are you like a meme? Can you do memes? I like work in this business. The second you ask me to like post a meme, I can't. My brain just doesn't work that way. Can you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good with the memes. I'm pretty good with the memes.
It's a real blind spot in my game. I can't do it. There's another one that obviously the JT picture gets the Simba treatment. I think it's Simba. I've never seen Lion King, but Simba's the young lion, right? The kid lion?
Yeah.
Okay. See that? I'm learning so fast. So he gets the Simba treatment, and then someone named Sandin Jacobs, at Sandin Jacobs, put this online, which was fantastic. Listen, let's listen to this together.
Mango tear? Put it in reverse, tear? Put it in reverse. Oh, Lord. Lord, Jesus. Oh, Lord. Oh, Jesus. What the fuck are you doing, tear? Tear, what's going on?
That's one of my dad's favorite videos on the internet.
It's so good. It's
his favorite video.
It's very funny that it's your dad's too. It's like, it's like, you know, it is for slightly older people. I love that there's like a distinct twang in that guy's voice, so it probably plays very well in the South.
Right.
And then it happens to fit this moment perfectly because they're talking about Terry. Put it in reverse, Terry. Terry, what are you doing? And then the fireworks. Yeah. I mean, a perfect response to this dunk.
Yeah.
Niles, again, before I move on, can we talk about Dave, Writing on Dave?
Let's do it.
How'd you get Writing on Dave? How'd you get the job?
So I guess they had maybe like a short list of writers they wanted to hire to fill in their staff writer positions. And so being repped at CAA, I was on that list of writers.
Great.
And when I guess they were going through all the writers, they had saw I had a comedy special on YouTube, and at the time that was my first one, Girls Don't Twerk to Jokes. And so Jeff Schaefer and Lil Dicky, aka Dave, they both watched it and let me know in my interview that they've been watching my stand-up. And that kind of set me apart a little bit. And
amazing.
With this new season, Dave is going on tour, so like in the meeting, if you got a meeting with Dave and Jeff, Jeff is also the co-creator of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like Larry's right-hand man with the writing. And so I knew him from that and writing on Seinfeld. So he's kind of like somebody I've always looked up to.
God damn.
But and so what they wanted me to do in the meeting was pitch my own tour episode. And so it was dope that basically I just got to pitch a wild night I had on tour personally.
Ah, perfect.
As the episode, and they loved it, and I got the job, and they liked my stand up, and so I kind of had an advantage on the writing competition because I just got off tour, and I did stand up, which he had liked to see, so it was kind of cool that the things I do extra outside of writing worked to get me the job.
This show is about moments. It's about talking about moments, big moments, funny moments, and entertaining moments. I love thinking about the moments from people's careers, the guest careers too. What that's a moment. You get the interview with Dickie. Great show. You're excited about being on this. Is this your first writing job?
Yeah, ever.
First writing job ever. You hear what I'm saying? Leaves college, comes, starts working in the business, getting up. First writing job ever. He goes in the meeting and they go, cold, pitch me a moment, pitch me a night. What happens? And he's able to pull something out. That's a huge moment, and it pays off. Fantastic. Congratulations. Is that the biggest moment of your career so far? Is there a moment in your career, maybe it's getting up, maybe it's the stand-up special, is there a moment in your career where you go, things have changed significantly after this moment?
Yeah, I would say three moments. Getting Dave. I had a joke, this trans joke, go viral.
Yes, it's so good.
That got shared by a lot of like big, you know, media things on the internet. And then when my Burger King joke dropped on Comedy Central.
The Burger King joke is so fantastic. I mean, I'm not going to have you tell these jokes. I'm going to post them all on the social thread. They'll be all on the show's social. At First Ballot HOF on Instagram, at First Ballot Pod on Twitter. I realize those should be the same. I get it. I understand. It's a fuck up. Those jokes are so great. And by the by, he says trans joke. He's not. He deftly and artistically makes a joke in that space, which I think is worthwhile and very funny and deft and shows a handle on the language. And I think it was I appreciate your guts in doing that as well. Those are really great. Those are also great answers. Fantastic. Writing for Dave. It must have. The show is really great. You know, I'm going to just be honest with you for a second now. I don't like that Dave is that funny and talented.
Right.
I don't like that he's also good at basketball.
Right.
I don't like that he's even got like I call them like jealousy projects. Have you seen his music video where he goes around and like he goes, I'm shooting a video and I wanted to make it seem like I'm rich, so could I shoot in
your house? Isn't it so cool? That's my favorite video.
I was so deeply jealous when I saw that I had nothing to do with that video. Right. I don't like all of those things about him.
I said it before. He's the guy that thinks about and does something, and when you watch it, you go, why didn't I think of that?
Right.
That's Little Dicky ideas. They're like, they're not the most crazy elaborate in the world, but they're so simple and dope that you're just like, why did nobody else come up with this first? Why was he first? It's something about him, man. I told him. It's like, you're really good at thinking of things first.
Yes.
He's good at that.
And he's also like good with like sports comedy stuff too. You seem like a competitive guy. Doesn't part of you hate him?
Oh, a little bit. For sure. If you're if you really like want to do this, that's part of you should hate Lil Dicky.
That's right.
He's so good at marketing himself and putting things out. I mean, like I really got to talk to him and get to know him this year. He's really cool. And like, he was telling me how like he worked his marketing jobs. He had learned some things. And so basically he saved up money to where he could shoot 5 months of music videos. Mm. 5 months worth of music videos. He's not Lil Dicky yet. He's just a dude working in an office. And it's like, to think that?
Yes.
Like, how did you know, like, I'm going to shoot 5 months of music videos, and that way, eventually, one will go crazy. But, like, the first one he drops hit 1 million views on the first day.
So
when that hit, he was like, oh, shit, well, I got 5 months of this shit. And people are loving it. So, I mean, the dude's a creative genius.
He really is.
So you got it. If you really want to do this stuff, you got to hate him a little bit. Because it's like,
I really appreciate you admitting that. The show is so good. I've yet to watch season two. I've been sort of saving it up so I can rip through it all. That show is, for me, this is strictly Neil. This is not Niall speaking about his bosses. This is Neil. That show is so good that even the things I don't like, they drift away so fast because of all of the things I love. There was an episode, I can't remember her name, a director, she's a black woman. She directed the episode where he was flirting with Doja Cat.
Yeah.
That episode finished and I went, hold on, I'm going through the credits and I'm writing down the names of the people that had something to do with this so that I can remember to work with them or talk to them at some point. That's how much I like the show. I almost hate the guy. It's very close to being hate, really. Yeah. Congratulations on being on the show. I can't wait to watch the season.
Thank you.
Check it out on FX and Hulu at some point after that. You look it up. You figure it out. You've got the internet. The next credential is our test of time. This is when we compare this moment, LeBron's dunk on Jason Terry, against other moments like it in history. I want to compare it against one right out of the chute. I've got a good one to compare this to. LeBron's dunk on Jason Terry happens on March 18th, 2013. 8 days before that, on March 10th, 2013, this play happens.
Here comes Chris Paul. The
lob. Oh, I thought it was going to be this one.
Yeah. Monster jam by DeAndre Jordan. Oh. I want to see it again. This could be as good as anyone we saw from Blake.
Absolutely. That's as good as anybody anywhere.
Yeah. DeAndre on Brandon Knight.
I thought that was what you were going to play. No, that dunk was crazy. That dunk kicked Brandon Knight out the league.
Done.
You ain't seen him since.
Let me tell you, I don't know if he left the league immediately, but no one took him serious after that point.
Nope.
God damn, that is sad.
And like,
listen.
With that team being called like Lob City and everything, that was kind of like a moment that encapsulated their whole team.
Totally.
Like, this is what we do. You know, that's what you put on the highlight reel.
So good. Dr. Jerry Wang, one of my favorite meme guys, social media people, had a fantastic gif where a casket drops on top of Brandon Knight.
Oh, no.
It's so good. A great dunk. So which of these two? And listen, I'm not saying they both can't make the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But as we're comparing this against other dunks, if there was a dunk that was better than this LeBron James, Jason Terry casket dunk just 8 days in front. Wow.
Those are the same.
Can you put this Jason Terry dunk in if maybe DeAndre's is better? Which of those dunks is better to you?
Well, the LeBron's is better because he's LeBron.
Perfect.
And then it's just like the get back, the revenge on Jason Terry, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like Brandon Knight was just like a unsuspected bystander.
Yes. Just an unwitting
participant. Wrong dude, wrong time, you know?
Very much so. Is that your favorite LeBron James dunk? Do you have and where does it rank amongst other LeBron James dunks?
I think
there's
that's
the
my
one
favorite.
On Nurkic.
That might be one of my favorites.
He punches one on Tim Duncan, which I had forgotten about, but I saw it in sort of reviewing for this. I really appreciate somebody boofing
the Tim Duncan one. The one on Nurkic is crazy.
Crazy.
There was one on Damon Jones that was nasty.
Yes, super nasty. Yeah.
But I think, this might be my favorite LeBron dunk, you know.
Do you have a favorite LeBron James moment in general?
What
moment, if you think about LeBron James's career up until this point, and by the way, we're, you and I as Laker fans, we're licking our chops about the rest of this playoffs. Very excited. I don't want to get into it. I'm very superstitious. Very excited about the future.
Yeah.
That said, in terms of the past, do you have a favorite LeBron James moment?
Yeah, game six against Boston.
Fantastic.
That was a legacy defining game because it was like you lose that game, you go home, or you can force this game seven back at home. And it was like one of those things. It's like, dang, like so much had been said narratively just about LeBron. Mm-hmm. If he was going to be one of these players to be in the greatest of all time. And like at this time, he was only 26. And so people were saying he couldn't win in the playoffs, all this kind of shit. So I think that game was very important for just like a legacy defining moment. And just like that, because it was just a must win. And so he just literally went out there and just took the game by himself.
Perfectly said. Next credential, our X factor. Everybody knows what an X factor is. Any X factors from this game? I want to pitch one to you. Can I pitch you an X factor for this moment? Now, we're looking for anything that might make this moment greater. We need all of the votes. We need all of the little things that could make this moment great to see if this thing can go in the First Ballot Hall of Fame. Nothing waltzes into the First Ballot Hall of Fame. It's a very prestigious honor. So we got to look at everything. And as I'm watching the clip, I look and see Norris Cole. Great first name. Norris. Fantastic. Don't know how many Norrises have ever been in the NBA. That's fun. And then I also look at Norris Cole, and I'm like looking at pictures of the play, and I'm seeing Norris Cole. And I remember that someone said that Norris Cole looks like Waldo Faldo from Family Matters.
He does.
You remember that? Yeah. That to me is a huge X factor here. That Waldo Faldo. You could, if you squint your eyes, Waldo Faldo is in this play.
Yeah.
Are you a Family Matters fan? Your thoughts on Waldo
that show.
Faldo? How dare you?
It's like. It's in Bad Things America has done to black people. It's in that top five of crack.
Holy shit. Crack would be what are the others? Are there others? Do you have others?
Crack would be number crack five. And slavery one and two. Family Matters in that top five. Dog shit show. Some bullshit. I hate that show.
Do you remember that old tweet when I'm doing it this no justice. Someone wrote about how Harriet would walk down the steps all dressed up and like the audience would ooh and ah and the guy's like, but she looked like shit. Do you remember that tweet?
I don't remember that.
It's so funny. I'm gonna find it, I'll put it in the social, but he's like Harriet walking down the stairs looking like shit and everybody's ooh and ah. It's very funny. I'm doing this no favors.
That's
I'm so
funny.
Sorry.
I'm about to check that out.
But it's so funny. It's really great. I'll send it to you. The next credentials posterized any great images. Honestly, to me, there's not one like singular image that's like the one that media is on the poster that defines this. But honestly, every angle of this shot, there are so many different photos of Jason Terry falling at different angles with his legs at different angles, sort of obtuse angles. Some of them are really scissored out. LeBron standing over him, Jason Terry lying flat on his back. All of the images of this moment, fantastic. All of them additive here. Niles, I see the clock is running out on us. That can only mean one thing. It's time for America's favorite podcast segment. It's called More Important. Rob, make this echo right here. More Important. Niles, do you know how More Important works? You can be honest.
I do not.
Perfect. That's great. That's perfect. Niles, one of the many things I found about you that I thought was very impressive, and you've mentioned this already, it's your ability to tackle tough jokes in a changing landscape for comedy. You haven't shied away from finding ways to make good, tasteful jokes about marginalized people, serious issues. I think you're very adept at that, and I appreciate you having the guts to try it. But Niles, in 2023, aren't there some things that shouldn't be joked about? What topics and issues are above, rightfully above, a Niles Abstin joke?
Oh, for me to talk about? Oh, okay. I don't.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Niles. Nobody wants to hear that bullshit you were just about to make up. That PC answer. It's time for something more important. The music's playing. There's a ticker counting us down. We got to go fast. Niles, I'm about to ask you a series of questions. Your answer to these questions will all be way more important than that bullshit you were just going to make up. Your answer to these questions will define who you are as a man on this planet. Are you ready for more important?
Yeah.
What is your favorite beverage?
Favorite beverage ever? Verner's Ginger Ale.
Wow. Wow. That's like my grandma's answer, too. Fantastic. You can only eat at one chain restaurant for the rest of your life now.
Chain?
Only one for the rest of your life.
Chain restaurant?
One chain restaurant the rest of your life. What is it?
Ooh, if it's a chain restaurant, might have to be Outback Steakhouse.
Oh, I love it. What is it you love about Outback?
Either Outback or Chili's. If we're doing chain.
You got to go one. You can't say both. I'm not allowing Outback, you both. You got to say one of the Outback. Onion, you know? Fantastic. Bloomin' Onion is fantastic. As good as it gets. It's on the Mount Rushmore of a chain restaurant signature dishes, Bloomin' Onion. Niles, what is your favorite comedy thing? It can be a movie, a TV show, a podcast segment, ahem, anything you want. What is your favorite comedy thing right now?
I think my favorite comedy thing right now would probably be Ali Sadiq's last comedy special.
I haven't seen it, but Ali's so
it's really funny. Good. It's called Domino Effect. I think it was the special that was better than mine last year.
The only one. There was that one. Was somebody got one.
Yeah,
the
one. It was amazing.
Fantastic. A great answer. Niles, you're hysterical. This podcast is about sports and it's supposed to be funny. Who is the funniest athlete of all time?
Funniest athlete of all time. Ooh. Shaq got to be up there. Gronkowski was really funny.
Gronkowski's a funny guy.
Yeah,
Gronkowski willing to do it.
Him and Shaq kind of have that same vibe. Yeah, I'd probably go Shaq. He's probably one of the funniest athletes ever.
A great answer. Fantastic. Niles, name a comedian you know you're certain you could beat up in a fight. And you got to be positive about this. They might get a shot off. They might get a jab, like a left hand in. But who are you absolutely dragging down the street? Name a comedian you're absolutely beating up.
Oh, my God. Because some of the older ones, they got that old man strength.
I don't know if I want to try
Earthquake. You know what I'm saying? Like he might have something for me. You never know.
He might have years of pent-up rage in there. You just don't know.
Kevin Hart's my
boss. You got to know. You got to have.
So I'm not going to say.
There you go.
So
don't
I'm not
say Kevin.
Say that. I want to get back. I want to be hired back for season 4, so definitely not Kev. Cat Williams. I don't know. Cat Williams crazy. Oh, Mulaney.
Mulaney. Yes.
I can definitely take Mulaney. I don't. I think most people could see a picture of John Mulaney and be like, "Yeah, I could beat him up." Like even children.
He's got that kind of face, and let me tell you, he wears suits a lot. You see him in a suit, you're certain you could beat that guy up. Dribble his head right down the street.
His last special he just dropped was amazing.
I can't wait to see it, but I appreciate you acknowledging that you could definitely beat John Mulaney up. Niles, next question. Are you a roller coaster guy?
That's not really. I enjoy them, but it's not something I really like to do.
I don't like them. I don't get why it's cool or like fun to be like, look, it's like I'm going to die. I don't see it. Niles, last question. You've been great so far. More important, it's been great. What is the thing you wanted as a child that you never got?
I never got to sit courtside at a game.
Yes. Let me tell you, that is on my goddamn list. Are you picking Staples Center,
I
presume?
I got to do
it. Yeah. Amazing. I'm so jealous. We had a guy on the show, Ryan Bergara, very funny guy, started his own YouTube channel, a lot like you, an entrepreneur, very funny. And he posted pictures on his Instagram of him sitting courtside at the Lakers game. And I it's right in the middle of the interview. I'm like, there's like a thing between us now because I think it's bullshit that you did that. Like, you're successful. It's great. But also, like, are you that successful? And now I'm competitive with you and I don't like it. And I'm just going to say it to get it out, clear the air between us. That's a great answer. Courtside. Yeah. You're going to do it someday.
One day. You're going to do it.
I can feel it. You're going to break. It's going to be great. That's it. That's more important. You were fantastic. Niles, it's time. We're ready for the cosign. This has been a lot of fun to talk with you about. It's time for the cosign. The floor is yours. I'm asking you the question. Does LeBron James's casket job on Jason Terry belong in the First Ballot Hall of Fame, and why?
It has to. Just from an impact standpoint, I feel like LeBron made a statement with that dunk, with winning that game as well. Basically showing the Celtics that, like, what they had started in 07 was staying in 07, and they won't be winning any more championships with this core. So, because I feel like they blew it up not too long after and straighted people off to Brooklyn. So I feel like
that
all of that kind of represents that moment.
I love it. Fantastic. A great answer. It's time for the induction speech. That's when it's me, Neil, I could get to decide whether this thing goes into the first ballot Hall of Fame. I'm going to take everything Niall said into account for certain, but ultimately this is my job. This is my Hall of Fame. I'm the owner. I set this thing up. This is my show. I got to decide this thing. I don't know what else you want. This, again, this show is about that intersection between sports and entertainment and comedy. I don't just want a game-winning play. I want a play that's incredible, athletic execution at its peak, but there's also a layer of entertainment and humor that you just don't see in most places. What else do you want in this play? The guy dunks on the dude. He damn near flips on top of his head, lands flat on his back. LeBron stares at him. He says the coolest thing after... right after the game, it's fantastic. The Celtics window closes. Get those dudes out of here. If you hate the Celtics, of course you do. That goddamn racist town. They close the door on that whole get up. They get out of here. They're done. It's tying up loose threads. It's super funny. It's entertaining. He wins the game damn near at the buzzer. He goes on to win the championship. What else are you looking for? Jason Terry, LeBron James, this dunk. Congratulations. Oh, Norris Cole, Mario Chalmers, too. Congratulations. May your plaque hang on the walls of the First Ballot Hall of Fame forever. Oh, my God. Niles, how do you feel? You must feel
great. I agree.
Niles, how can people follow you? What can you
put? Follow me on Twitter, at Niles100, or follow me on Instagram, at The Niles Abson Show, and there you can find links to my upcoming shows and my YouTube channel.
I get massive vibes from you. I think you're going to take off and you're going to be huge, and you are fantastic.
Thank
on
you.
The show. The this being like a jump, that is as good as it's gotten on this show. Fantastic. Thank you so much for being on. That's it. That's the show. My thanks to Mr. Niles Abson. He's the future, everybody. He's coming on. I'm telling you, support that man. We're all we got. My shout out today goes to Lil Espresso at Andrewski on Twitter. He's in the South Bay. He's a Laker fan, and he told his followers about our Serena Williams Crip Walk episode with Chloe Hilliard. Check that one out if you haven't heard it. Chloe's so funny. The moment's so important. Thank you to Andrewski again. I appreciate the love. The show keeps growing. Credits. Robbie and Jessica are the team. Rhythm J makes the beats. Jorge Narano plays the guitar. The show is written and recorded by yours truly. Rate and review the show. Tell a friend and come back next week for more First Ballot. Chicken, chicken, chicken burgers, chicken fries and chicken burgers.